From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we start today's program with just a little news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Maybe not the best journalism in the world, though. Apparently this week, the man, this is from Semaphore, the man at the heart of a high-stakes political mix-up that rippled, I say rippled, through global political journalism in the final days of the New York mayoral candidate campaign, was supposedly falsely claiming to be former New York Mayor Bill de Blasio. That's what the Times of London reported. But he wasn't. He was a 59-year-old Long Island wine importer named Bill de Blasio. But, you know, it's an easy mistake to make. And there's a little news from this smart, smart world. It's getting dumber. According to Axios, people are increasingly swapping smart devices for buttons, switches, and knobs in their homes. Reading nooks, not books, reading nooks are being mentioned 48% more often in home listings compared with a year ago, according to Zillow. A home where technology is always in the background working and listening feels anxiety producing instead of restorative, according to one architect interviewed by Axios. And of course, the shutdown of Amazon's cloud, it's not a cloud, last week, which made many smart devices, well, special needs devices, may have convinced some people that the future is behind us. We'll see. Hello, welcome to the show.
Got a cute
Where it's finally cooling off. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And while we're contemplating a future that is not so bright, we can actually take our shades off. This from the land of 4,000 princes, our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is preparing to shift its $925 billion sovereign wealth fund away from a focus on real estate giga projects. They have dominated its development goals for the last decade. You've heard about them. This is from Reuters. Crown Prince bin Salman, Crown Prince Bonesaw to you, has introduced his Vision 2030 plan way back in 2016 to transform the economy away from oil and a focus on large real estate projects. The Sovereign Wealth Fund, Public Investment Fund, PIF to you and me, has been the driving force for financing the plan. The original strategy included developments such as NEOM. I believe you've heard about it on this program. It's a futuristic, or was to be a futuristic, city in the desert by the Red Sea. And there was also a plan to host international winter sports in Saudi Arabia, the desert, ladies and gentlemen. But the kingdom has mountains in the north to use man-made snow to create ski slopes. NEOM had a projected population of 9 million people. They ain't there. They ain't there yet. It's faced repeated delays, as have other projects, driven by a determination to secure more sustainable near-term returns for the Public Investment Fund, the PIF. There's a new strategy. It aims to narrow the focus to other existing developments, such as logistics, your mineral exploitation, and your religious tourism. Come on, it's a Hajj. A source asked not to be identified due to the sensitivity of the matter in disclosing these changes, these backpedalings, you might say. The kingdom is also betting on investment in artificial intelligence. Good luck with that. And data centers powered by its vast hydrocarbon and other energy resources. So let's outsource our electricity needs to our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. But don't look for that NEOM or that NEON anytime soon. Because when it's PIF, it's piffle. And now the latest jingle created by AI with lyrics by the show.
Your chatbot is a shrink. It might just be time to think. You could be getting unduly frantic, 'cause the bot is being too sacrificial. If your chatbot is a shrink, it might be driving you to drink. Your condition just may worsen, 'cause you think you're talking to a person. If your chatbot is a shrink, you might just end up in
In a blog post this week, OpenAI, the leading company in the chatbot world, estimates that about 0.15% of its users have conversations, quote, that include explicit indicators of potential suicidal planning or intent, unquote, in any given week. Extrapolating from the company's user base of about 800 million weekly active users, that would mean around 1.2 million people every week are discussing serious mental health issues with ChatGPT. What a good idea. Meanwhile, many organizations rushing to cut staff in the name of AI efficiency are expected to quietly rehire those roles, often offshore or at lower salary. The Register, the British tech journal, is quoting Forrester's Predictions 2026, the Future of Work analysis. It says half of AI-attributed layoffs are likely to be reversed. Quote, many companies claim to be cutting jobs due to AI. Some of these efforts yield spectacular failures. Other times, AI isn't actually replacing human workers at all. Too often, the C-suite, that's the executive suite, lays workers off for the future promise of AI, says the report. Its analysis found that using AI for financially driven layoffs can backfire. 55% of employers regret laying off workers because of AI. The more people in charge of AI investment expected to increase headcount than to decrease it, 57% to 15%. That's over the next year. Quote, we predict that much of this work will be given to lower wage human workers offshore or at lower salary, the report adds. The impact may be most pronounced, that is pronounced, and HR, where teams are adopting a flood of AI tools. They need sandbags, I would think. Staffing in the HR function could be cut by half, even as expected to deliver the same level of service with the help of AI-driven talent and workforce planning systems. Quote, many will turn to vendors' AI-washed product offerings to give them at least the appearance of AI readiness, with only a few armed with the ability to discern legit tech from vaporware, says the report. A couple months ago, research firm Gartner, different one, predicted that more than 40% of AI projects would be canceled by the end of 2027 due to rising costs, unclear business value, or insufficient risk controls. I know people with those. Speaking of chatbots, artificial intelligence chatbots are worse at retrieving accurate information and reasoning when trained on large amounts of low-quality content. Sounds like us, particularly if the content is popular on social media. That's according to a preprint quoted in Nature. The preprint comes on Archive, middle of last month. In data science, good quality data need to meet certain criteria, such as being, you know, grammatically correct and understandable, says the co-author, Zhang Yang Wang. No, I didn't. Who studies generative AI at the University of Texas at Austin. These criteria fail to capture differences in content quality, he says. He and his colleagues wanted to see the effects of large language models trained on low-quality data. That's defined as short, popular social media posts or those containing superficial or sensationalist content, like everything. They looked at how these data affected model reasoning, retrieval of information from long inputs, the ethics of responses, and model personality traits. I like her. The team reports that models given low-quality data skip steps in their reasoning process or don't use reasoning at all. Again, sounds like us, resulting in the model providing incorrect information about a topic. On when the authors presented a multiple choice question, the model would pick the wrong answer. In data sets with a mix of junk and high-quality data, the negative effect on reasoning increased as the proportion of junk data increased. That study has yet to be peer-reviewed. Not by machines. Don't let a chatbot be your shrink. And now, news of the godly. Well, good news if you're in New Orleans and you got abused. Clergy sex abuse survivors have overwhelmingly approved a $230 million bankruptcy settlement with the Archdiocese of New Orleans. This potentially clears the way for the local church's long-running case to be resolved by the end of the year. That's coming up. This according to the Times-Picayune. According to court documents filed this week, 99.6% of all creditors in the case who submitted ballots during a voting period that lasted 6 weeks vote in favor of the settlement. Like, let's get on with it. These creditors are divided into several groups. More than 650 abuse survivors are one group. Vendors and small businesses was a second group. And bondholders owed some $30 million by the Archdiocese would be the third. Bankruptcy law says two-thirds of all votes cast within each group or class must be in favor of a settlement before the court can confirm it. The abuse survivors and the trade or business creditors overwhelmingly cleared that bar, but not the bondholders. They voted against the plan by a vote of 59 to 14. So don't get abused where bondholders are making. The opposition was not unexpected. Bondholder attorneys have argued for months that the proposed settlement, which initially would have paid them $3 million of their $30 million owed, was unfair. Court documents filed this week show an updated version of the settlement. The bondholders are now getting $7.2 million over 12 years. Hey, it goes by like that. News of the godly. And just because Halloween is over doesn't mean that you can't still be scared. Richest man on earth, supposedly, and you don't like Wikipedia, you start your own imitation encyclopedia. It's called Grokpedia. because Elon's supposed AI system is called Grok. He's lifted a bunch of pages from Wikipedia and let AI fill in the rest, since he owns an AI company. He gets that free. Musk announced the launch of Grokpedia version 0.1 this week, qualifying any potential failures on the site is likely to be improved when version 1.0 finally rolls around. Quote, but even at 0.1, it's better than Wikipedia, in my opinion. Unquote, Musk. It's tricky to be better than Wikipedia when many of its 885,000 articles come directly from Wikipedia pages. This reported by British tech journal The Register, as pointed out by several commentators on Musk's own X, the phrase, quote, the content is adapted from Wikipedia licensed under Creative Commons, unquote, appears at the bottom of a number of Grokpedia pages. A Google site search of Grokpedia for pages containing that phrase returns a lot of hits. It's not exhaustive by any means. Beyond that, The Verge points out, multiple pages appeared copied verbatim from their Wikipedia equivalents, which led Wikipedia to tell The Verge that even Grokpedia needs Wikipedia to exist. Too many pedias? Beyond simply copying content from Wikipedia, Grokpedia appears to be heavily dependent upon using AI to generate so-called slop, unquote, pages that even its namesake AI bot isn't convinced is a fair representation of the facts. One asked Grok to point out logical fallacies in Grokpedia's page about Wikipedia, for example. Musk's own AI said that Grokpedia was, quote, cherry-picking evidence, unquote, about Wikipedia to amplify claims that Wikipedia had a left-wing bias. That's what Musk has claimed. Quoting again from Grok, the page is factually dense and cites sources, but it exhibits biases through selective presentation of evidence and heavily reliant on a single critical voice, creating an unbalanced critical lens, said Grok, speaking of its sister outfit, Grokpedia. Continuing, quote, the overall framing appeals to concerns about ideological capture, potentially evoking emotional responses from readers skeptical of woke institutions, unquote. The debut of Grokpedia was delayed in its launch by a week in order to, quoting Musk, purge out the propaganda, unquote. He hasn't convinced Grok, his own chatbot. Quote, Grokpedia is not a fair and unbiased source of information, at least not in the neutral encyclopedic sense that Wikipedia aspires to. It's a critique wearing encyclopedia clothing, unquote. Grok. It's Grok and Grohl to me. And now from universetoday.com. We successfully plugged the hole in the ozone layer that was discovered in the 1980s by banning ozone-depleting substances such as chlorofluorocarbons, your CFCs. But we might be unintentionally creating another potential atmospheric calamity by using the upper atmosphere to destroy a huge constellation of satellites after a very short lifetime, like 5 years. Talked about that recently on this program. Now, according to a new paper from the Technical University of Braunschweig, material from satellites that burn up in the atmosphere, especially transition metals, could have unforeseen consequences on atmospheric chemistry. And we, humans, are now the biggest contributor of some of those elements. Now, a lot of other stuff gets into our upper atmosphere. Not the meters. They're funky. The total mass of material injected into the atmosphere from rockets and satellites is only about 7% of the mass of the stuff from meteors. But since the rockets and satellites are primarily made up of metals, whereas meteors are primarily made up of silicates, The amount of metal we inject into the atmosphere is around 16%, that of natural causes. For a few particular elements, it's much higher. In 2015, human-made sources were the highest contributors to 18 different elements in the atmosphere. That number jumped last year to 24 different chemicals. They could grow to 30, that we will be the primary reason for their increased levels in the atmosphere in the coming years and decades. Even active debris removal would result in these elements being seeded throughout the atmosphere. Some of those chemicals, those elements, are relatively common on Earth. Your lithium, your tin, and they shouldn't have any major impacts on the atmosphere. But some are transition metals, well known for their catalytic activity. I love that activity. It's one of my... The increased presence of them in the atmosphere could start reactions that could have devastating impacts on atmospheric chemistry at large. These elements include several that are fundamental to spacecraft, your copper and titanium. The paper calculates that the injections of those elements have more than doubled in the last 10 years, primarily due to the advent of satellite mega constellations like Elon Musk's Starlink. Satellites in these constellations are intentionally designed to demise themselves. Yes, it's a verb now. Congratulations. Welcome to the verbery. After a few years, they would do that by burning up in the atmosphere. This might solve the problem of a bunch of derelict junk that would otherwise turn into hazardous projectiles into, you know, our Earth. But it creates its own problem of potentially messing up the atmosphere's chemistry. The authors of the report say there are three different ways the space waste, as they call it, can affect the environment. First, directly acting as a catalyst for reactions that destroy the ozone layer, like CFCs did back in the 70s and 80s. Next, to act as seeds for cloud formation, potentially altering how clouds form in certain parts of the atmosphere, which could dramatically impact weather patterns down here. Third risk would be radiative effects of particles in the atmosphere could either reflect or trap heat from the sun, cooling or warming the atmosphere in difficult to discern ways. There are different options for dealing with space junk. That's the good news. The bad news, almost all of them could make the transition metals problem worse. Sounds like Musk love.
We can start to from Mar-a-Lago. Well, no way you can get in. This is still your favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio brought to you by Trump Dishware. Give all your meals the taste of gold. This week, the criminal leftist conspiracy against our brilliant administration expanded beyond the viciously stupid Democrats to include a pathetic new group, brain-damaged federal judges. In a move from a playbook that could have been written by the Communist Party, if there still is one, two federal judges ruled that our administration has to pay to feed people when food prices are the lowest in the history of the world. The idea that unelected judges can overturn the will of the people who gave your favorite president the kind of mandate nobody has ever seen should shock any fair-minded person. Of course, our Justice Department is preparing an appeal of those monstrously mistaken rulings by judges who wouldn't know a food stamp if it licked them. But maybe it's time to ask a bigger question. Does the federal government really need judges? Of course they're good at the local level to send criminals and illegals and their protester friends to prison, hopefully for the rest of their lives. But a law or statute that tells the president to give lifetime appointments to total strangers just waiting to defy him makes no sense. Just like the Senate, where the Republicans keep voting to end the Democrat-engineered government shutdown. Now, some brilliant senators are saying now is the time to get rid of the filibuster rule that handcuffs the Senate. But some of the smartest people in my administration are asking a better question. Do we need a Senate at all? Congress has two houses, when many people in this country have only one. That doesn't sound fair to me. The fake news is making a big deal out of me taking an MRI test in my recent successful medical checkup, where I got results the likes of which no one has ever seen. The fact is, I scored perfectly on the MRI test, getting all the questions right, including camera, person, and whale. And of course, the deranged critics are soiling themselves about my marble and gold remodeling of the beautiful White House bathroom. They should know that no taxpayer money went into this magnificent restoration of Lincoln's original marble dream. It was paid for entirely by donors who want nothing more than a fair shake when it comes to their merger plans, and by the money we save by not giving illegal immigrants and their neighbors food stamps. A beautiful bathroom, unlike those useless stamps, will make all Americans proud again. That's MAPA, which is just another way of saying MAGA. Thank you for your attention to all these matters, and stay loyal.
True Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Bathroom Tissue, 4-Ply, Oh My, So Long.
From New Orleans, this is the show. This week, the administration of the felon-in-chief seems to have embraced two different attitudes towards the previous administration of Ronald Reagan. In one case, the president seemed to be offended by a commercial put out by the government of Ontario province in Canada, in which they reran old footage of Ronald Reagan denouncing tariffs, saying they never work, that they harm the economies that they're supposed to help. And the felon-in-chief was so upset about that that he temporarily imposed more tariffs on Canada because, you know, it's going to be our 51st state. On the other hand, he seems to be taking a slogan from the Reagan era, the war on drugs, and turning it into reality. More specifically, a war on drug boats. The United States has now militarily attacked and destroyed about a dozen boats off the coast of Venezuela and Colombia and killed some people that the government says are drug runners without offering any proof. that that might be so. Meanwhile, the war on immigrants, or at least illegal immigrants, continues and has been escalated. This week, the administration announced it was bringing Border Patrol officers from the border to patrol far away from the border in states like, states with Democratic governors like Illinois. Tactics that might mirror or even increase in dynamics, those having been used by ICE, masking, and just hauling people away at random. The Border Patrol and ICE people are not trained in law enforcement tactics the way, let's say, police are. But there is a quota, there is a number of arrests which is demanded by the administration. And this doubling down of the effort seems to be a response to that feeling in the administration that the numbers of arrests being made are not the numbers required, at least by the deputy chief of staff, who seems to be in charge of all that, Stephen Miller. Hence this newest from the Stephen Miller Band.
Aren't meeting the quota. Aliens running wild in Chicago and Dakota. ICE is falling short, though their tactics are terrific. But we're winning in the Caribbean and Pacific. Keel invaders, bomb raiders. We want aliens dead like a drug boat. Kill them right in the street. Dead like a drug boat. No dopey norms to meet. We've got aliens by the caboose full. So tear gas sure is useful. But dead like a drug boat. It makes our plans complete. If you're a criminal, you're spreading terror. So calling them terrorists, no way, it's an error. Killing them by bombing. Marxists say it's alarming. But in our cities, war zones, it's just traffic calming. Yeah! Dead like a drug boat, an instant solution. We may even put it in the Constitution. Dead like a drug boat, not trying to be sporting. When aliens see our aircraft, they'll get busy self-deporting.
Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
As I mentioned moments ago, Prime Minister Mark Carney of Canada said this weekend he apologized to President Trump for the anti-tariff television ad from the Canadian province of Ontario that led Trump to abruptly cut off talks about U.S. tariffs on steel, aluminum, and other products from Canada. He told reporters he'd made the apology earlier in the week during a dinner where he and Trump sat across from each other. It was not long after the president had said he had no interest in speaking with Carney for, quote, a long time. The president claimed the ad had been created to interfere with the decision of the Supreme Court, which is considering a legal challenge to many of Trump's tariffs. Quote, the president was offended by the act, or by the ad, rather, Carney told reporters. It's not something I would have done, which is to put it in place, that advertisement, and so I apologize to him. Unquote. Tucker Carlson, remember him? He apologized to Nick Fuentes. Remember him? For previously calling Fuentes a weird little gay kid during a discussion on Carlson's YouTube thing during an interview with Fuentes, who until recently had been the other end of a feud with Carlson. Fuentes is a right-wing influencer. The discussion moved on to the negative effects of pornography among young people today. Quote, something that's almost never talked about is this is a generation that's totally sexually dysfunctional, I think, because of pornography, said Fuentes. Replied Carlson, seems like it's making a lot of people gay, too. Unquote. Fuentes then argued that young people who become addicted to pornography are more likely to get bored and therefore move on to different, more taboo content, like gay or transgender pornography, said Carlson. Quote, I'm sorry I called you gay, by the way, but I think I'm just too old or something. I'm like, why isn't anyone married? Unquote. He had repeatedly accused Fuentes of being gay during an interview with Candace Owens last August. Quote, Nick Fuentes, this child, this weird little gay kid in his basement in Chicago, said Carlson, who also described Fuentes as, quote, an angry gay kid.
Fun. It's fun. TV is fun.
Sounds like Tucker.
It's fun.
Dateline Hardin County, Kentucky. The Republican Party of Kentucky has opened an investigation after a local chairwoman posted a video depicting former President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama as apes. Hardin County Republican Party Chair Bobby Coleman posted, then deleted the AI video on the group's Facebook page. It's Republican Party of Kentucky's Facebook page. A viewer sent a screenshot of the now-deleted post to the local TV station. The video showed the Obamas as apes, along with several other prominent current and past Democratic leaders as animals, and President Donald Trump as a lion. Not a cowardly one, either. Following the incident, the Republican Party of Kentucky launched an investigation. Quote, the Republican Party of Kentucky condemns hate in all its forms, the party posted on Facebook. The post is vile and reprehensible and is directly adverse to all that we stand for as a party and a nation. We're actively investigating the matter and will take the harshest action available to us against those involved. We remain committed to the values of Lincoln. Unquote. Mercury isn't mentioned. Coleman also issued a statement after the matter, saying she posted the video to celebrate Trump's success as president, not to denigrate the Obamas. Quote, earlier today, I shared a video from social media that was intended to celebrate President Trump's successful policy achievements by depicting him as a Lion King, triumphing over liberal Democrats. I thought this video was a silly way to celebrate the policy victories of the past 9 months. I apologize for sharing the video and for amplifying offensive imagery of former President Obama. As someone who does not engage with racist tropes, I did not consider the underlying meaning that this video may have had. I am not racist, and any suggestion to the contrary does not reflect my values or character. I deleted the video and apologized long before the Republican Party of Kentucky issued their statement. While I respect their stance, I had already deleted the post and tried to make amends. Unquote. Chair of the Republican Party of Hardin County, Kentucky, Bobby Coleman. Dateline Dallas. Dallas Mavericks reserve guard Brandon Williams apologized this week for being a distraction after he was arrested on a charge of marijuana possession. Quote, I can't really go into further detail, he said before the Mavericks game against the Indiana Pacers. I just want to apologize for just being a distraction. I want to take full accountability. Unquote. He was arrested at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport after less than 2 ounces of marijuana were found in his luggage. Yep, still happening. Confronted with allegations they had cheated in an introductory data science course and fudged their attendance, dozens of undergraduates at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign recently sent two professors a mea culpa via email. There was one problem. According to the New York Times, they had not written the emails. AI had, according to the professors, Carl Flanagan and Wade Fagan Umschneider. The students got their comeuppance in a large lecture hall middle of October when the professors read aloud their identical, less than genuine apologies from a projector screen. Video from that class showed. The professors posted about it on social media, where it drew widespread attention. They said, "Dear Professor Flanagan, I want to sincerely apologize," Flanagan said. And I was like, "Thank you." They're owning up to it. They're apologizing. And then I got another email, the second email, and then the third, and then everybody sort of sincerely apologizing. And suddenly it became a little less sincere, unquote. The professors said they decided to use the episode to teach a lesson in academic integrity. They didn't take disciplinary action against the students. The Canadian Armed Forces apologized this week for racial discrimination and harassment current and past members faced while serving their country. The apology was made by General Jenny Carignan, Chief of the Defense Staff, and Chief Warrant Officer Bob McCann in Ottawa. Quote, "For way too long, First Nations, Inuit, Métis, Black, Asian, and other racialized members of the Canadian Armed Forces faced some systemic barriers that limited their ability to serve, contribute, and thrive as equal members, and too often mistreated and even abused at the hands of their fellow members," said Carignan. "I acknowledge we failed you. We didn't create an environment where you could serve your country to the highest level with pride and determination, and I'm sorry for the silence, indifference, and that this went on for years," unquote. She said the forces have committed to eliminating systemic barriers, addressing biases at every level. Quote, "Racism has no place in the Canadian Armed Forces. It cannot be tolerated. It has no place in our future." And Chief of the Defense Staff, General Carignan, issued the emotional formal apology on behalf of the forces to current and former service members and their families. And finally, UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, that's like our Treasury Secretary, Rachel Reeves, apologized this week for renting out her family home without a license after entering office just last year. This is just weeks away from her having to submit a budget to Parliament. She wrote to the Prime Minister to say that she had not obtained permission to lease the property, located in London's Dulwich Wood district, had only newly understood it was required. Such licenses are only required in some parts of the country. Quote, "This was an inadvertent mistake. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we took immediate action and have applied for the license," Reeves wrote. "I sincerely apologize for this error," unquote. Sounds like something like what Letitia James did. No. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now quickly followed by the side effects of the week.
Opzelura can lower your ability to fight infections, including TB or hepatitis B or C. Serious lung infections, skin cancer, blood clots, and low blood cell counts occurred with Opzelura. In people taking JAK inhibitors, serious infections, increased risk of death, lymphoma, other cancers, and major cardiovascular events have occurred. The most common side effects were acne and itching where applied.
That doesn't sound so bad. And speaking of itching where applied, at the height of his legal troubles last year, Donald Trump claimed he was running out of cash if a $500 million civil penalty was not reduced to around $100 million. He argued in a court filing he would have no choice but to hold a fire sale of his real estate assets. Fast forward mere months, says the Financial Times, and he has enjoyed a stark reversal in political and financial fortune. He has become substantially wealthier since the inauguration. His family business is striking deals at home and abroad without concern over conflicts of interest. After making millions of dollars selling, you know, Bibles and stuff, he has extracted tens of millions of dollars more from social media and news companies who settled lawsuits. His wife, Melania, has a $40 million documentary deal with Amazon, but the heart of Trump's newfound wealth, says the Financial Times, is a rapidly growing cryptocurrency empire built by the president and his family. According to an investigation by the Times, this business has already reaped more than $1 billion in pre-tax profits over the last year, in part thanks to a crypto boom fueled by the administration's own industry-friendly policies. The calculation of the income from these crypto projects includes only realized profits. The ventures have also boosted his net worth on paper by billions of dollars. His stake in Trump Media and Technology Group, the parent company of Truth Social, not Truth Social Audio, that's separate, and a Bitcoin treasury business is now worth $1.9 billion. The crypto empire is built on a vast web of opaque ventures in the largely unregulated industry, including digital trading cards, meme coins, stable coins, tokens, and a so-called decentralized finance platform, all touting their close ties to the president's family. These ventures have brought in large sums from billionaire foreign investors, entities tied to nation states, and at least one individual formerly investigated by U.S. authorities. All this while Trump has followed through on his promise to become the first crypto president. He has mandated the creation of a national Bitcoin reserve and installed crypto-friendly leadership at the main U.S. regulatory agencies. Companies that fled the U.S. under the Biden administration have returned with full force, and crypto executives have been welcomed with open arms at Trump's White House. It's crypto summer there, but it's a crypto winter in Canada, where an exchange has been slapped with a fine of almost $127 million U.S., largest ever penalty by Canada's financial intelligence agency for infractions, including failing to flag more than 1,000 transactions with suspected links to criminal activity. Gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or whenever you want it on your audio device of choice. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks. Thanks also to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for their help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Know. Playlist of the music heard here on, and a lot of stuff to read and watch and enjoy, all at harryshear.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.